Belle, when you were in your early teens, mm-hmm. and of course the development years of associations, organizations, mm-hmm. clubs, groups, and things of that sort,
yeah.
in what direction did you go?
Again, it was in the direction of writing, and mostly writing, theatricals, things of that kind. I did a lot of writing when I was in school.
Was
and
any
I guess
of it
they
produced?
Yes. Yes, a great
Tell
deal of it was produced. And then I had, later on I had a story accepted about the IKC and the Little Theater, which was the most perfect, Eric, I'm telling you a story, I shouldn't know. In grade school, I had written a play aimed at the eighth grade, and it was written and produced at the school. It was a graduation play. But I did a terrible thing at that time. My mother had brought with her from Russia a strand of amber. And I didn't know what the value of anything was. But I thought they'd look very pretty on a crown with one of the girls, you know. So I took them. Needless to say, I never got them back. My poor mother never had her ambers back. But I used to write poetry and call on a school, write it, that kind of thing. Later on, I joined the Settlement Players. There was a contest, an Allegheny County writing contest. And I wrote a play, I don't even remember offhand what it was called now. And there were four plays selected out of, I don't know how many, there must have been a couple thousand. And I got third place. And Walt Framer, do you remember that name?
Sure.
Walt Framer got fourth place, believe it or not. So, and there were stories in the newspapers, clippings, of course, which I still have. And then, instead of the acting role, I did writing, and I did all the PR for the Settlement Players at that time. And I became...
Now, where were the Settlement Players?
At the old Settlement House on Center Avenue.
Tell us a little something.
Oh, that was the era of the tellers. That was the era of Sam Rosenberg. That was the era of who else came out of there? Well, people that no longer live here. There are many names which would mean very little to most people, probably.
But they might be interesting.
There were the Schwartzes, Goldens, Al Golden, who was a playwright and wrote in New York and wrote here. He's now in California, probably retired. He's related to me distantly, but you kind of lose people after a certain length of time. So that in those days, we thought we were so important. We loved it. Those were the days when I wrote a story about the Settlement Playhouse and the little theater we had there, which at that time was judged to be the most perfect in Allegheny County, in Pennsylvania, rather, excuse me. It's a broader scope. It had, I don't remember how many seats, but it had a rubberized floor, and the floor had the right rise to it so that you saw perfectly from every view. The theater itself, the proscenium, was so perfectly designed. It just, everything lent. The sound was great there. We even had a green room, which, you know, all players have in large theaters. This is where you meet and eat and all that kind of thing. You know, it is for the actors and those involved. That was published, and I wish I could remember the name of the magazine where it was published, but I don't remember it anymore. It was a long time ago.
Who led the Settlement Players?
A man by the name of Lou Isaacs. He was a short guy. Little paunchy belly, always had a cigar, and I still don't know to this day why I was appointed the assistant director, but I was his assistant director until the Settlement Players, until they were no longer in existence. And a very sad thing was the reason for it. What happened was, and those who were involved will remember, like S. Don Maul was a part of it, and Hannah Frank, if you remember, names are beginning to come back. There was one show he was doing called The Best People, and Hannah Golden was in it. She was a marvelous little actress. Hannah was married to Walt, and she died very young. But at any rate, what Lou Isaacs had done was to double cast the play. And that was anathema to everyone, because those who were in it to begin with were afraid that they would be supplanted, and those who were in the wings were afraid they wouldn't get a chance to, you know, to act. And that eventually broke up the Players, unfortunately. Now, some of them went to the Playhouse at the Y.
When was the Y established?
The Playhouse. Let me see if I can remember. I think it was in the early 30s. I think, maybe a little later. I don't know for sure. But you know many of the people who were involved in that. I mean, they are around today and they're very active still. I mean, it was really great.
Who?
Well, for instance, there was Ned Elbaum. There was, and then from there they all went to the Pittsburgh Playhouse. And there was Frieda Kazin Alber, and there was Elliot Alber, and there was a girl, Pearl, I can't remember their names, but at any rate, many of them are still around. They're still doing things from time to time. Now, there were a lot of people. And then from there, most of them went to the Pittsburgh Playhouse. And, of course, Nat Elbaum was very active there, and so was Frieda Alber, and so Elliot did things from time to time. And I will never forget something that Libby Elbaum did once. It was Mike Berger was in that crew, too. This was a Christmas party after one of the performances. And my husband and I were invited. I don't even remember by whom, but we were. We were there. And there was an actor there, Johnny Johns. Some of you may remember him. I don't know. Johnny was a superb actor. And he came up into the party room, and he was carrying a huge ham. And Libby looked at him, and she looked at this ham, and in that quiet voice, she said, "Ooh, twins? Two hams." Isn't that great?
Wonderful.
Oh, I tell you, that's something every once in a while, I still remind her about that. Wow. It was really great. It was. And this is the way it all happened here. I mean, and you know that the Pittsburgh Playhouse even today, it's on the same grounds. This was the old Tree of Life Synagogue. You probably know that, I don't know. But at any rate, this is the way things change, and the more they change, the more they stay the same, as you know.
Well, this was a period of socializing, the beginning of your social world.
Yes, and remember too, we had been over World War I, two hadn't arrived. Most people were, money was scarce. These were the days when the social events took place at the Y. These were the days when you had a date, you were at the William Penn in that room downstairs.
Well, Chatterbox.
The Chatterbox. And you got dressed up to the teeth with your long dresses, your formals on Saturday night. Or you went to Webster Hall. What was his name? The band leader? Oh, I can't remember, but at any rate, these were the days when you appreciated things, really. And how many young men had cars? I mean, this was, if anybody had a car, everybody in the world piled into it. One on top of another, it didn't matter, because that's the only way you got places. And we used streetcars a great deal, and it was just not the same as it is today. I mean, today, my granddaughter, who's not 17 yet, has her own car now. I mean, you know, this is the way it is. But those were golden days, as far as I was concerned.
Where did you meet your husband?
Believe it or not, at the Willows. Which, for
tell
some
us a little
people
bit about
may
the
not.
Willows.
But the Willows, well, the Willows was a swimming pool in Oakmont. And right near, there was a place where you went dancing. What was it called? I don't remember even. It was a boat. And you just had to be seen there Saturday night, once a month at least. And you had to go to the Willows to swim. And that is where I met Leonard. Somebody introduced us. And I saw this great big tall fellow sitting there. And he smiled. And I thought, gee, what a nice guy. And I thought, well, that's that. I was with someone else at the time, too. But by golly, he called me that evening. And that's how it started.
Where was Leonard at that particular time?
Where was he?
Was he through with school? Or?
Yes, he was already in law. Leonard was he's almost 11 years older than I.
Where did Leonard go to school, though?
He went to school to Fifth and to Duquesne. And he had family to take care of. You know, his father had him for a while, and his mother, his aunt, he had two sisters. Now, at that time, his older sister was married. Florence wasn't married either. She married Oscar Rosenzweig Ross, is what we changed it to, from McKeesport. You may have known part of that family. And that's the way it got started. Of course, we didn't get married for some 7 or 8 years, I don't remember now which it was. In the meantime, I was engaged to someone from Cleveland, but it just couldn't be, because I think the moment we met, I felt that Leonard was going to spend the rest of his and my life together.
What were you doing?
What was I doing? Yeah, what was I doing at the time? Oh, I know what I was doing at the time. At that time, I was with Rosa Goldman, which was a linen trousseau house, a very fine one on Liberty Avenue. And it wasn't long before they discovered I knew how to shop. So findings and all kinds of things for the, I mean, this was really expensive. This was at a time when things were bad, but when the people from Swickley still paid $5 per handkerchief. I remember that. When things were done up there to perfection for the Melons, the all of these people. And that's where I was. And by the way, the Goldman there, Henry Goldman was one of their sons. And Henry and I were both involved at the Playhouse, at the Settlement Playhouse. So that this, I always had a ride, a way of getting there. I was never there alone, you know. So that's the way it started. That's what I was doing at that particular time. And then much later, of course, came other things.
What other productive things did you do before you were married? Anything?
Well, I did some shows, yes. I did some shows. I was always interested in, always loved little kids. And I used to do shows with the children in the neighborhood. You know, directed them with things. They were all, so long as they were younger than I was, it was easy to handle them, you know. And it was a way of taking care of my little sisters, too. So I was never discouraged from it.
When were you and Leonard married?
In 1937. So it would be almost 50 years. We were married May 23rd. And that's the way it was.
Where did you live?
At first, we lived with Leonard's folks for a short time, and then we had a duplex on Tilbury Street, and that's where Paul was born. And then we had a house on Stanton Avenue, where Bud was born. And basically, I mean, that was it. In the meantime, my sisters had their own involvements, and again, we lived near each other. And it made a big, big difference. Today it's a whole other thing. And I wonder, because with my own, they're far away, that you get accustomed to that. I guess you do, don't you? You have to.
The old story, if you hang long enough, you get used to it.
You get used to it, that's right. But let's see now, when was it? My affiliation with the, oh, I know. Then, of course, along the way with my mother, yes. My mother, if you didn't know her very well, was a very shy lady, but with an immortally delicious sense of humor and a wonderful sense of history, too. And I think I got my love for Yiddish to begin with from my mother, because we always spoke in Yiddish, the rest were in English. Now, my mother, I remember once, my sister Agnes called me and she said, "Did you talk to Mom yesterday?" And I said, "No, why?" I don't think I did. "Why?" She says, "Do you know where she went yesterday?" "No, where'd she go?" "She went to the Stanley to hear Johnny Ray." I said, "Oh, you've got to be kidding. It's impossible." I mean, she always made fun of the American singers, of the American way, you know. And she used to always say, "America gone up." I don't think I have to. You all know what it means. Okay. So to think that she would go to hear Johnny Ray at the Stanley Theater, there must be some reason why. So I called her. But you know, with my mother, you went to New York by way of Chicago. I mean, you just couldn't ask a direct question. I said, "Mom, I called you yesterday. You weren't home." And in Yiddish, she says, "Well, if I wasn't home, I wasn't home." I said, "Where did you go?" "Uh-huh. You've talked to Agnes already? So if you know, why are you asking me?" You know, this kind of thing. "All right, Mom, you went to hear Johnny Ray. I want to know why." "Fragments, don't ask." So what happened? Well, she read in the Forward newspaper. Now, you have to know that the Forward newspaper, to many of the Jews at that particular time, was next. First came God, then came the Forward newspaper. And everything in the Forward newspaper is gospel, not to be disputed by anybody. So it was written in the Forward newspaper that there was a nice Jewish boy. His name is Johnny Ray. He was as Irish as you guys be. And he's married to a nice Jewish girl. Now, her father had a string of hotels all the way from Boston to California. But in the Forward newspaper, there were Arma mentioned, poor people, okay? And he was coming to Pittsburgh. She says it could even be a second Al Jolson. It could be God knows what, and she was going to hear him. What happens? Well, she went down to the Stanley Theater, and there was a whole lineup. And what was in line there? Mostly the Bobby Sockers. Bobby Sockers, you remember the expression? She called them also the Pishikas, Bobby Sockers. And they had to stand in line, and her poor Krishas, her poor knees and legs were hurting, but she was hellbound, because after all, she knew that part of my father's family was Misha Elman, and there were musicians, and she loved good music. And it's interesting that those Europeans in those days inherited a sense of good music. We have to acquire it, but they inherited that. So at any rate, she stood in line. Finally came time in the rush, she said, to get in to get seats. And finally, the usher found her a seat. What she didn't know was it was a double feature yet, too. So she had to sit through a double feature film. And finally, he comes out. And she said she could hardly believe it. Only here can such a thing happen. America gone, if that expression again. What happened? He comes out and he starts to cry, Vuyin in Kop, you know, that's crying, because that was the name of the song, the cry song. And then he takes off his tie and throws it on the ground, and he takes off his shirt and he throws that on the ground, and he gets down on his knees, and the Bobby Sockers are yelling, "Hoo-hoo, Johnny!" And then she says, "You know what? I don't think he's even a Jew." That was my mother. So that when I took the early days, when I took the Hadassah donor chairmanship for the first time, because I had it twice, I figured, goodness, I haven't even told Mom. And if she hears it from someone else, sign Soros. So I called her on the phone and I said, "Mom, I have something to tell you." So she, "Well, I don't know, the Yiddish is wonderful." And then she says, this was just, she always called me different names. "What have you done now? You know, what did you do now?" I said, "Well, I became the donor chairman for Hadassah." Silence. I said, "Did you hear what I said, Mom?" I heard. I said, "So?" She said, "So? this is a job for a policeman. What did you need it for? Why didn't you wait till the children are older? You know, the usual thing. So I said, Mom, there'll be plenty of people to help me and all this kind of thing. And she said, yeah, I've heard this story too. She says, tell me the truth. Did you really take it? I said, yes, Mom, I did. Well, Ashinganaman, you've taken already? And you should see not to make me ashamed of you. But that's the way it was.
How did you become involved with Hadassahville, and when?
Again, it goes back to the writing bit. It was during Irene Stern's, remember? Her chair, her presidency. Someone called me, because at that time there was a radio program. And it wasn't going well, and they needed someone. I said, well, I've never done radio, but you write. So I thought and thought and thought, and I thought, well, I was already a member anyway. But so I said, okay, I'll try it on a monthly basis. This program appeared every Saturday night. So I took it, and the first program was with Ann Lowenthal. And I had it all written out. But that never happened again. After that, it was all spontaneous, with my notes written out. And we interviewed people from, well, you name it. We had Ben-Gurion, we had Golda Meir, we had movie people, we had anyone who came through Pittsburgh who was the least bit interested landed on our program. And there was one thing that happened that I will never forget. Judith Epstein was in town, and she was my guest on the program. And we talked about what happened during the creation of Israel, how people danced in the streets, how they all felt when Truman recognized Israel. It went on like this, and it was, for me, something to hold close to my heart, that particular one. About 4 days later, in the mail, I get a letter with no return address. And it was the most horrible piece of writing ever addressed to me. Apparently, I think it was a man who wrote that he found it abhorrent, the program Mrs. Epstein and I did, and he hopes there comes a time when we will be rounded up as pigs, and that Mrs. Epstein and I will be at the front of the line, and that he will be the one to shoot us. That's the kind of stuff that happened. And I remember Leonard, I wasn't going to show him the letter, but I finally decided I had to. I showed it to him, and he wanted me to quit. As of now, and we had quite a to-do about it, but I won. I stayed on. But there were lots of good times on that program, too. I wrote a series called Adam and Eve about a man and a woman and a little boy. And it ran like once a month. And Frieda Elber and Ed Elbaum were on that. And it drew a lot of attention. I think one of the most interesting things that happened as a result of that program, remember when Harold Silver came to Pittsburgh and went to the to Road of Shalom Temple? That happened as a result of the programs I told you before. One of the incidents that happened shortly after my interview with Harold Silver came when I was trying to find out for the Passover program how the Red Sea could have parted. Of course, it was none of my business, but I had to know. So I went to various places and finally went to the museum. I knew that somewhere there, some genealogist, somebody had to know about things like this, if it was possible. So that was where I met Jim Schwager, who was the curator. And I told him what I wanted to know. And he said, why, of course it could have happened. This kind of thing does happen. It has something to do with the winds, and I don't remember what it was called. And I said, you mean it could have happened? He says, I have no statistics that it happened then, but it is certainly possible and probably has happened many times. To what extent, I don't know. But that was how I met Jim Schwager, who became practically a lifelong friend at that time. Now, Jim, as it happens, later on, was part of a group who went to Israel to dig at Ashdod. Now, if you go to Ashdod even today, you'll find it's a great big hole in the ground, and then there's a fence or something around it. But Jim made it come alive to me. It was the ancient Philistine city. And he said, you know, when I think of it, I think that most people are interested in only one thing, the shards that are found, a piece from here. He said, as far as I'm concerned, that's garbage. I'm only interested in what that piece has to tell me about the age level, the patina, how many years. That's what we read into it. I said, well, what happens? He says, you know, the state of Israel is very generous about that kind of thing. They do give a good percentage of it away to museums if they want it. He says, and Israel has done that. But he said, what it tells us is the only thing that's important to us. Another thing, he and his family had spent a whole summer, of course the children were younger then, in Israel. And he said, you know, they learned to speak Hebrew, and I never did. He said, when they would say Laila Tov, which is good night, he said, I thought they were talking about the name of a movie star. What did I know what Laila Tov was? That kind of thing. But to this day, I think his children who are married and grown, all that, they have a special spot for Israel. By the way, speaking of the donor for Hadassah, there was a time during my presidency when we had Leon Uris as a guest. And I think that was the largest donor we ever had because Exodus was number one on everybody's list. And Leon came, and he was a very friendly, very easygoing person with a kind of a fear about things. I never could figure out just what it was. And during the donor, with everybody watching us carefully, Leon leaned over and he said, Bell, I have to go to the men's room now. I said, well, it's out that way, go, and we'll wait for you here. He says, no, I won't be able to walk out. I'm frightened of all the women. I said, well, what do you want me to do? He says, walk out with me. So I did, waited, we came back. 2 years ago, and this is 30-some years later, I went to a B'nai B'rith weekend, and an old lady walked up to me. I don't even remember her name, and she said, Belle, do you remember when you were president of Hadassah and Leon Uris was here? You and he got up and walked out and were gone for a while. Where did you go? What did you do? And I looked her full in the eye and I said, well, we went exactly where you thought we went and we did what you thought we did. And she looked at me and I walked away.
When did you become president of Hadassah?
1956, I think it was. 1956. I served 3 years. And many wonderful things happened during that. Oh, I'll never forget one. Jack Karpus, who was the Associate Director General of the Hadassah Hospital, was here. And we were invited to the, what was the name of the doctor that he was so friendly with and who was a head neurologist here, I think. Well, I don't remember. At any rate, we were invited to a cocktail party for Jack. We came to the door. Now, I had met the doctor before. I never met his wife. And I said to her, I'm Belle Shapiro. She said, from Hadassah? I said, yes. And she just stood there looking at me, and I said, what's wrong? Isn't my slip showing? And her husband said, you deserve that. And said to me later, where in the world did you get to have the nerve to say that? He says, but you know, she deserved it. And that was one of those things that happened.
Of side 2, tape 1, to be continued on tape 2. Excellent.